A new idea gets some daylight at the North Dakota legislature as a special session discusses free breakfast and lunch for all school kids. The mayor of Grand Forks says 3% spending cap? We've been doing that for 10 years. Minnesota Republicans have some choices to make when it comes to U.S. Senate candidates, Royce White or Michelle Tafoya. Who you got? And thousands of Minnesota business owners will shut their companies down tomorrow, basically because they hate Donald Trump. Those stories and many more to come today here on the Steve Holcim Show. Good morning, my friend. It's great to be here with you on this beautiful Thursday morning. I am out in the Bakken today, hanging out with my friends in Watford City, North Dakota. Love coming out this way. I grew up on a hog and cattle farm in central Minnesota, so whenever I get to come out to cattle country, it just feels good. Just really great, down-to-earth, salt-of-the-earth kind of people. Just my kind of folks. Love being out here, and when I head home, I've got something to look forward to headed that way, too. So no matter where I get to go, it's always a good time for me, and I'm glad to bring a little bit of that spirit with me here on the radio each morning now from 9 to 11 a.m. So we got a lot of ground to cover today, as I mentioned to you, so we're going to get right to it today. Morning Wire coming up here just a minute. We'll give you all the headlines, a little rapid fire rundown of what's going on in the world today, opening markets. That looks really good, by the way. Some economic numbers came in today that were, I don't know, better than expected, because I think these days in the Trump economy, people are just expecting good news way more than we were maybe a couple of years ago. But the markets like what they're seeing today, so we're going to talk about that. Unemployment claims, some decent numbers there. Official third quarter GDP is in, and that looks really good. Spending is up as well, which is a tricky little kind of under the radar kind of number. So a lot of that to talk about here on the show today. Got a couple of guests coming your way. Dr. Bob Mayo from North Dakota State University's Challey Institute will join us. And Bob has done a fair amount of research on the number of doctors in North Dakota. And what direction are we going with that trend there? We have a physician shortage now. And as you heard from Kelly Armstrong yesterday, it's likely going to get worse. He said that in his State of the State address. So we'll talk to Dr. Mayo about that and find out what can the state do and how bad is the problem. So we'll do that at 9:30 today. At 10:30, we're going to be joined by Jill Morissette. He's the director of the Office of Management and Budget for the state of North Dakota. We're going to talk about trends with state revenue and what happens when he's managing and his team is managing the resources of the state when things slow down a little bit, which is happening out here in the oil patch. I have to tell you from firsthand experience yesterday, I checked in at my hotel at about a little before 10, I suppose, when I got out here. And there were, at that time, maybe 10 cars in the parking lot of the hotel. Now, this is Teddy's Residential Suites out in Watford City, which is a four-star hotel, basically, out this way, just so you know. You're not going to find many nicer hotels anywhere. I suppose you go to, like, Minneapolis or Chicago, Denver, you can find the five stars or whatever, but it's a really nice hotel, and the rates are very reasonable. It's like $100 for a room for a night, which is, I mean, it's hard to find much better than that wherever you go. So really nice place. Normally, when I come out here, there are 25 to 30 cars in the parking lot. And yesterday, now I got here a little earlier than I normally do, so that might be part of the story. But at least from my first look at what I saw last night, things are a little slower out here. We know that the Continental Resources CEO, Harold Hamm, said they've shut down their rigs out here because the oil just isn't worth enough to keep them going. So I'm going to be interested to see what I see and what I hear as I go through town a little bit more today after the show. So we're going to talk about all those things. Thousands of businesses across Minnesota are expected to close tomorrow to protest ICE being in Minnesota. So we apparently don't love law enforcement everywhere in the state of Minnesota. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Best thing I heard all day was actually yesterday from Scott Bessent in Davos. A side of Scott Bessent I had not seen before. So he woke up and chose violence yesterday, and Gavin Newsom just happened to be in the way. So we've got that coming up, too. And then story of the day, there is another way going through the legislature to tackle this issue of paying for kids and their lunches and their breakfasts in North Dakota. I like it a lot better than the initial response on this. I like it better than the petition. And I just wonder, you've heard me talk about this. If a kid needs food because their parents can't afford food, then yes, a good and decent humane society takes care of those things. But I've got some numbers for you about how many kids get free or reduced price meals and what the level of income is for that. And I'm just wondering what we're doing here. What are we doing? This doesn't make any sense to me. So we'll get into that coming up in just a few minutes. All right. It is 12 past the hour. Let's get to it here. We start with the almanac here on the Morning Wire. Average high for this day is 18 degrees in Fargo-Moorhead. Minus one is the average low. Record high 51 in 1942. Record low minus 37 in 1936. Sunrise this morning was at 8:02. Yeah, that's right. We're getting close to sunrise before 8 a.m., and we will take that. Those times central, by the way, those of you listening on KTGO, some of you out in the mountain time zone, not many of you, but a few. Sun will set tonight at 5:15. We will gain 2 minutes and 20 seconds of daylight today, and I'm here for every single minute of it. All right, in the market today, stocks off to a very good start to the day. Dow up 222, S&P 500 up 22, NASDAQ up 127. So if you take a look at those numbers with what we had yesterday, we have now recovered about 80% of what we lost when there was a sell-off on Tuesday, which is the day that everybody thought Trump was going to start bombing Greenland and shut down the world's economy and tariffs for everybody. Well, we've just about rebounded to where we were before. This is one of those things, when you see dips like that we saw on Tuesday, if you've got the ability to do it, you just buy, because these things pass so quickly. And the market are fed by a narrative of fear that comes from major media sources, and they make you think that things are falling apart, and that is never really the case. WTI crude oil today down about 83 cents. We're back under $60 a barrel on WTI. So that's not going to help people get more excited about drilling out here in the patch. Gold today and silver. Gold basically unchanged at $4,839 an ounce. Silver up $1.15 at $93.79. And Bitcoin today unchanged from yesterday, right around $89,000. So that's a look at markets. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $2.85. North Dakota, 252, Minnesota, 266, South Dakota, 263. Diesel fuel today, if you're driving the big rig, 354 a gallon for your diesel today. And that is about what it was yesterday. In the news today, State Representative Ty Dressler from Richardson has introduced another way to look at funding school meals for kids. As you know, and as we told you yesterday, Mike Nathy has introduced a bill that would basically mirror the petition that's going in front of North Dakota voters, polling overwhelmingly positive across North Dakota on this one. And so Nathy says, well, we might as well do it in the legislature. We can maybe do this in a little bit more of a structural way than what the petition might end up looking like. So let's do our own thing and kind of get ahead of this. And it basically is that every kid in North Dakota gets free, not just lunch, which used to be the way it was. And well, now breakfast is part of the deal. When I was growing up, there was school lunch. There was never school breakfast, but now apparently there is. And this would feed everybody with state tax money. If you make $1 million, your kid's getting free lunch. So, which has been my biggest concern about that. Well, Dressler's bill would raise the limit at which you would be able to get free school meal to 300% of the federal poverty line, which would be basically about $100,000. So over $100,000, you don't get the free lunch. Under that, you get that. To me, this makes a lot more sense than anything else that's been proposed so far, but we'll see. I think Nathy's bill is going to get most of the attention in Bismarck, but I hope that Representative Dressler's bill gets a long look as well. I think if you're $100,000 making your money, I don't think the issue is that you can't afford to feed your kids. Valley News Live reports that a Fargo woman charged with attempted murder after allegedly striking her boyfriend with a hatchet has been ordered to undergo mental health treatment. Lena De Oliveira was found incompetent to proceed following a fitness examination conducted earlier this week. Also in the news today, Grand Forks Mayor Brandon Bochensky is putting together a plan to decrease property taxes in his city. Last year, as you know, the state legislature put a cap of 3%. And he said in the last 10 years, we've maybe only had to get close to that once or twice. Those are some of the stories making headlines. More as we continue on the Steve Ahlstrom Show. Don't go away. It should darn near be a federal law that you have to listen to some Rush every morning just to get yourself going. Love these tunes. Some classic rock in the morning. Way to go, Addison. Good job playing the hits today. At Capstone Classical Academy, they believe cultural renewal begins with education, forming wise and virtuous young men and women who love what is true, good, and beautiful, and you can support this effort. Go online right now to givingheartsday.org and search Capstone to make your tax-deductible gift for Giving Hearts Day. Capstone, rigorous academic studies with a Christian worldview. Speaking of classic rock, I found on my playlist yesterday driving out to Watford City the Eagles' Hell Freezes Over album, and this has most of the album is when they went on MTV 1996 and did it kind of the acoustic set there. And the Hotel California track is the one out of that performance that everybody plays and everybody loves. And while I love that song too, there are some unbelievably good tunes that kind of the B-side, you know, that people don't talk a whole lot about. But I love that, like, end to end, there's not a bad song on there. And that was when the Eagles were getting together after being off for 14 years or whatever. So, yeah, there's, I just was singing classic rock, listening to some Rush there, that Eagles are fantastic. Saw them in concert for the first time a couple winters ago down in St. Paul. And I can't wait to go see them again sometime, trying to figure out. I see they're at the Sphere through March in Vegas. I would love to get out there and see those guys. Yeah, they're so good, and they still sound fantastic. All right, story of the day. I alluded to it a little bit. I probably went longer than I needed to, knowing I was going to get into this again. But you guys, I realize I sound like a jerk when I talk about this issue, and it'd be so easy for somebody. Oh, Steve, what's the matter with you? You Republicans, you have no heart. You want kids to starve during school. You're okay if kids are tipping over in their chairs middle of the afternoon. Because nothing could be further from the truth. And I've said many times that you have to take care of kids and people when they cannot take care of themselves. But what are we doing here with this free school lunch thing? There's a petition, which is fine. It's legal. They can do it and whatever. But apparently it's polling off the charts about just paying for universal free breakfast and lunch, not just one or the other, but both, for all North Dakota school kids. And to me, I feel like, okay, the first rule of government is to only do for people what they cannot do for themselves. Otherwise, you're going to end up spending money on everything for everybody every time. And that just is not sustainable. It doesn't work. There's no way that this can sustain itself long term. So the forum did a really nice job kind of chronicling all this today. There are two bills that got introduced yesterday because the people in the legislature say, okay, we're getting together to really talk about rural health funding, but let's do this thing too with school food, because this petition is going to go, if we do this thing, maybe it's a better way of doing it. We can kind of write the rules a little bit, make sure there's some more guardrails, whatever. So there are two bills that are going through. Mike Nathy, who is one of the key people in the House in North Dakota. I wish I had his title offhand. I don't, but you know what I mean. He's a guy has a lot of influence out there. He basically put in a bill that would mirror what the petition says, that every kid, free breakfast, free lunch, going to cost us $70 million a year. Well, there's another bill that was also introduced that I hope gets a lot of consideration from Representative Ty Dressler of Richardton. And he said, let's not pay for everybody, everything all the time here. If people have a concern with what we're paying for already, which is 225% of the poverty line, let's just boost this up a little so people feel better about how many kids have the opportunity. So he says, let's go to 300% of the federal poverty line. Now, Nathy's bill was debated and passed, and Dressler's bill apparently went through without any debate. So both got pushed through, and I don't know enough about the inner workings of the legislature to know which path is different or which is better or worse, but it looks like both bills are still alive, and that's a good thing, because we need to be looking at Ty Dressler's bill here on this thing. Okay, a couple of notes that I think are important. For a four-person household, the 2025 federal poverty level is $32,150. I've not seen the 26, but I imagine it goes up, you know, a little bit. So let's just say 30, let's say 33, okay, just for sake of round numbers here. No, in North Dakota, kids already get free meals, and the way the state has expanded this is that we are giving kids free meals up to 225% of the federal poverty line. Okay, so twice 33, so 66, and then another quarter of that. Let's say 65, 66, okay, for easy number. We're two-thirds of the way to 100. So right now, that's what we're talking about there. Now, if we go to 300% of federal poverty line, that's 33 times 3, that's 99. So it's basically $100,000. This is what Dressler's bill would do. What's wrong with that? Why do we need to pay for more than that? If your family's bringing home $100,000 a year, we should be able to fairly ask you to provide for your kids' school lunch. A loaf of bread, peanut butter, some carrot sticks, and an apple. What can that cost you? $5 a day? $25 a week, $100 a month to feed your kid a school lunch. You feed them at home, going out the door. They have a breakfast, and they go to school, and they get their free lunch, and they're doing just fine getting all the way through their day without spending any money out of your own pocket or theirs. And I appreciate people who are trying to be kind to kids, and I get it. There's always that thing you can say of, this is the only way we can make sure that every kid gets their free lunch, because a lot of things can happen. I would trust that our school teachers, principals, counselors, people who are working, understand who's coming to their school every day. And if there is some sort of extenuous circumstance on this one, then we take care of that by observant adults who care for kids and say, hey, let's figure this out some way. But just to universally do a rubber stamp and say everybody goes through doesn't make any sense to me. Because if that's the case, then, well, you got to make, well, then why are we not like walking door to door with some $100 bills at supper time? What are we doing about supper? How can we make sure, like, you can't fix every problem here. And the government, remember, has no money. The government only has the money that you and I give it. So this money is not free money. It's not the government's money. It's coming from us, whether that is federal or state appropriated funds. So you tell me where I'm wrong on this, because I feel like I'm missing something. I feel like I'm waking up in some parallel universe where nothing makes sense on this issue. Why is 300% of poverty, why is a $100,000 family getting free lunch? Why are the poorest families in North Dakota, through their tax money, supporting the wealthiest families on this deal? This is not needed. It's unnecessary. Therefore, it should not be a tax expenditure. Again, maybe I'm missing it. You tell me where I am wrong. All right, we got a few things to take care of. When we come back, Dr. Bob Mayo is going to talk with us about addressing the doctor shortage in North Dakota. Big subject at the legislature. That's next. Give us a call anytime, 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They can get you in quickly because they have recently expanded. That's right, whether it's mental health, physical health, anything like that, they've got great people that can help you. Go to valleychristian.co. They do occupational therapy, physical therapy too. So full service provider and lots of availability because they're just getting started. So good news. Get them now because they're going to fill up quick. You know that. And if you want to email us, studio@flagfamily.com, studio@flagfamily.com. The text line is open as well today, 701-237-1590. I'm in the Watford City studio today, so we've got all of our little amenities and tricks and trinkets here. So everything is good to go today. So let me know what you think. Tell me where I'm wrong on this school funding, school lunch thing. It's not just lunch. It's breakfast too. It's $70 million a year. And the proposal that I think makes sense is maybe raise it a little bit. But man, over $100,000 of income, you're getting free meals. It just doesn't make any sense to me. These are things that we can do for ourselves. We don't need the government to do these things. Anyway, that's my soapbox for today. Let me know if I'm missing something. Like I joke, am I on something or am I on to something? Let me know. 271-1100, studio at flagfamily.com, or text line 701-237-1590. We are pleased to be joined now on the phone line, the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, by Dr. Bob Mayo from the Chaley Institute at North Dakota State University. Dr. Mayo has become a friend over the years, and we've had him on the program a couple of times here and talking a little bit about some of the things going on across the state. He's done a lot of work on North Dakota's healthcare system and put out a big report about this back last June. And with all the conversation going on in the state legislature now about rural healthcare and funding and how do we make sure that people in the more remote areas of our state have healthcare so you don't have to drive 5 hours to go find a doctor somewhere. So Dr. Mayo, we appreciate your time. Great to visit with you again today.
Thank you for inviting me back. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
What goes through your mind, Dr. Mayo, when you hear this conversation happening at the state level now about we've got $199 million in federal funding coming in, we got to do something to make healthcare better in the state of North Dakota? Where does your mind go about solutions to this problem?
Well, it's very personal to me because I started this research because our daughter was born premature and we couldn't get specialist care for her. So this isn't just, you know, cold research for me. I think it's a good idea to look at what other states have done, other states that are dealing with similar problems, and other large rural states have had similar problems. And we can learn from what works because it's worked and what we've seen other states do that hasn't worked so well. We don't have to invent the wheel here.
So as you take a look at the issue in front of us, and your report you put out back in June was very comprehensive. North Dakota, 37th nationally for its doctor to a patient ratio. North Dakota is estimated to have a shortage of between 260 and 360 doctors coming up soon, and that could rise to a deficit of 500 doctors by 2040 if the population continues to grow. So as the state of North Dakota sits on some good resources, certainly when oil prices go down, we get less tax revenue and all of that. But we still are a state that does have some resources. We try to talk about what should we fund and what should we not. How does North Dakota get involved maybe on a funding perspective at the state level that could really make a difference here?
The one reform that other states we can learn from, that the legislature has the option to fund a little better, is the residency programs offered by the UND Medical School. North Dakota is dead last in the country in the number of residency slots per medical school graduate. And doctors tend to stay and practice permanently wherever they finish their education, because they start to put down roots. And if a student graduates from med school in North Dakota, odds are they have to leave the state to get their residency training. And if they go to Wisconsin for that, they're probably going to live in Wisconsin and practice there. We have 67 residency slots, at least we did last year. Iowa is adding 460 this year. That's a critical problem. And those residency slots, that if the legislature wants to increase them, it could be in rural medicine. That is a subfield that doctors can train in. And other states, South Dakota has a robust rural medicine residency program, and it works great. I think that's an option that the legislature can consider, in addition to the other things they're considering right now.
Yeah, help me out on this. So in Fargo, you've got, I'll just pick Sanford, Essentia. I'll just say one of those, Essentia, pick it out of a hat here. So Essentia can do its own residency programs, and I assume that they would pay for the students to come and do the residency there. But what I think you're saying is that, you know, go to a rural hospital in the middle of North Dakota, and maybe they don't have the budget or a way to make it desirable enough for med students coming out of UND to go to the middle of North Dakota and do a plan, or do a residency. So the state could incentivize that and get kids out of Grand Forks, maybe Fargo, and get them further west. Am I following you, what you're saying here?
Yeah, exactly. And that's how it works in the South Dakota program. A new medical school graduate will spend a year-ish in a larger metropolitan area getting more training and hands-on experience. Then they will transition to working in a rural clinic or a rural hospital, and they can learn there the peculiarities of providing medical care in a rural setting. And often when they complete that training, that's where they buy a home, that's where they live, and that community now has a doctor.
Interesting. Well, this hits home for me because when I was just out of college, I worked at a grain elevator, and I went into a big bin, a corn bin, and it had moldy corn in there. I got sick with mold poisoning. I was living in the Twin Cities at the time, was driving an hour home, got sick on the way home, went to the Twin Cities Suburban Hospital, and they're like, I don't really know what's wrong. And they kind of looked at me like I was crazy when I talked about being in a corn bin and maybe it was moldy. My buddy, who was in the same bin, who lived in the rural community, went to the hospital. They knew exactly what happened and how to treat him, and he was back on his feet in a day or two. I was sick for a week and a half because they just understood the nuances of rural life.
Absolutely. Practicing medicine in a rural community is not quite the same as practicing medicine in Manhattan.
Yes. So does the state of North Dakota do any funding for residency in rural health right now?
Yes, but not much. As I said, we only have 67 residency slots in total. And I think, if I remember correctly, four are in rural medicine. We need more than four doctors who know how to practice in a rural setting.
Yeah. What is the picture that you would paint long term? I mean, I start thinking to what happens in 10, 15, 20 years. You talked about 2040, we're 500 doctors short. This could literally mean the end of some of our small towns, could it not? I mean, if you know that you have health issues and you're living out in the country and it's, you know, 2 hours to get to the nearest hospital, and you have reason to be concerned about that, you might have to pick up and move into town, right?
Not just into town. My wife and I and our daughter live in Fargo. And even in Fargo, my wife has some special medical needs, too. Getting specialist care is like pulling teeth. And we seriously considered, do we have to move to Minneapolis, to back to D.C., to be able to get medical care? And I know people who have made that choice, who said, I have this, I need to see a whatever specialist. I can't get it here, and have moved away. And the other alternative is people who in rural communities who don't get adequate medical care but stay, they're going to have worse medical outcomes. And that's unfortunate, and it doesn't have to be the case.
One of the things that I'm trying to get better at, Dr. Mayo, is remembering that when we're talking about health, we're not just talking about physical health, but it's mental health as well. And we know that in the rural communities, the economy is very difficult right now. Commodity prices are very low. That leads to a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety, no question about it. For, you know, people that have had a farm in the family for 100 years, and they might not be able to make it another year or two. We may have a mental health provider shortage in our rural communities that is just as pronounced as the physical health issues.
We actually do. I have a bunch of numbers and charts on that issue as well. Most communities in this state, you can't get mental health care. And there are ways to address that as well, but they have to be done.
You've talked a little bit too in your research about the OBGYN avenue within mm-hmm. medicine, and that's a particular issue with something you call maternity care deserts. Tell us about that.
Yeah. If you have to drive 2-3 hours to get medical care when you're pregnant, well, you're not going to get all the medical care when you're pregnant that you need. And that's going to produce worse outcomes. You know, God willing, your baby will be fine. But if there's a problem, it may get overlooked. And it's simply not necessary. This goes back to the residency issue. There are zero residency slots in North Dakota for a medical school graduate to become trained as an OBGYN. You can't do it in North Dakota.
Hmm. All right, last question for you. I got about 30 seconds left here. So the legislature's getting together today to talk about how to spend $199 million. Mm-hmm. What advice would you have for them on this issue?
One of the big proposals is to give pharmacists the authority to prescribe medicines for certain, you know, not terribly serious conditions. This has already been done in Idaho in 2018, and it dramatically improved the healthcare availability to people in rural communities because many small towns don't have a doctor. Every one of them has a pharmacist, and it helps. It improves outcomes in chronic disease management. It's been tested in other states. Yeah. It works.
Dr. May, we appreciate your time. Great information right now when we need it. Thank you for taking the time. Appreciate your time today, sir. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
You can go to ndsu.edu/Challey Institute to find out more. When we come back, Roy Swider, Michelle Tafoya, who you got? I see Michelle Tafoya made the rounds yesterday after announcing that she was going to jump into the contest for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senator, and then she would go against Angie Craig, Peggy Flanagan, one of those that comes out of the Democrat side. And to this point, those are the names that have been kind of circulating on the Democrat side. On the Republican side, you've got a couple others, but most of the conversation is really centering on Tafoya now and Royce White. And Royce was the nominated candidate in 2026 when Amy Klobuchar was up for re-election, and she won that race fairly handily. Royce is back, and you know, it's good to come back second time around, more name recognition. People kind of get, it's good to be known in politics for sure. My question for you, 271-1100, or studio at flagfamily.com, or text line 701-237-1590. Who you got on this? Tafoya White. What do you think? Royce White, I've got a call into him, by the way. He's going to be speaking at the North Dakota Republican Convention coming up here in a few weeks. And I've got a call into Michelle Tafoya. Now I've got to go through her campaign manager, which is fine. And they're busy. They're trying to do all the national interviews and the big, you know, Twin Cities media appearances. I get all that. We're kind of up here in the northwest part of the state, so I understand all that. But we'll get Michelle on, I'm sure of that. And she did give our newsroom one of the first interviews of anybody because we've just built a bit of a relationship there. But what do you think? Who are you going to pull the lever for, as they say, or fill in the circle for, and why? I've learned over time not to try to figure out, okay, who's the most electable? Who will have the biggest problem? So I don't want to vote for somebody that I don't think can make it. I think you have to vote for the person that you believe in the most. And the problem for me is I love everything that Royce White stands for. He's right on all the issues that I've heard him talk about. Now, I've not heard him talk about anything economic, but I've heard him talk about a ton of just government oversight, some of the social issues we've seen in the day, former professional athlete, and a guy that I think has a great story. He had some mental health concerns a few years back and has kind of put that behind him. And when I listen to him now, I hear a guy that is focused. He's determined. He's right on a lot of the issues. There's a lot to like about Royce White. I also know Michelle Tafoya and her strengths and where she stands on the issues. And the only issue that I have probably a concern with her on is the life issue. She is pro-choice. And that's going to be a difficult road for her in this particular battle here. And I got an email from a gentleman named David yesterday. And he said, Steve, I was listening to your segment yesterday about Michelle. I've had several discussions with people at the county and congressional district level of the Republican Party about Michelle over the last few election cycles because her name has come up in the past. But unfortunately, for those who become delegates at the state level, she's not well thought of, and it's about her stance on abortion. And he said, even though I generally favor Michelle, I also struggle with her stance on that issue. Do I think it should completely disqualify her? No. But most delegates won't consider her because she's not strongly opposed to abortion. I have people in my household that would most likely not vote Tafoya because of that one issue. And look, I get that. When you're talking about the issues that matter in my world, like if we can't get this issue right, what does the rest of it matter if we're slaughtering babies? So I get all of that. But I also understand where she is saying that, look, I believe strongly, that I'm pro-life. I believe in all of that, but I just don't think it's the government's place. If I'm a true, you know, small government person, you know, I've got to kind of connect all those dots, and I get the battle on that as well. So I guess that's the biggest thing. And does she have enough votes at the party level, at the ground level, to get there? I think in a popular vote, she probably does better than she does, or in a general election, she probably does better than she would in a primary because of that one particular item. So I do get all of that, and it's not an easy question. I understand that the life issue is really important. I believe very strongly because I know Michelle enough to know what she's all about, and I've had a chance to get to know her behind the scenes. She is authentic and genuine about the issues and the stances she takes. And some people have said, oh, I think she's just kind of a milquetoast, go-along, get-along Republican. I don't see that in her. I don't. So that's my thought on it. But could we be proud to have both of them running? Yes, I do think so. I do think that there's no question, though, that Michelle has a better chance to win in a statewide election. When you see her name come out, most of the people that wanted to, you know, give her some arrows were like, oh, yeah, well, sports, yeah, she doesn't know. When you see the slings and arrows come out on someone like, you know, Kevin Cramer or someone like that, it's vile. On Trump, it's a different level of furor and anger. And maybe that tells you that Tafoya has a better shot at getting through. I'll say what I started this whole thing with, though. I think you have to vote for who you think is the right person, whether they're electable or not. I think we let the good Lord decide all that. Hour number two coming up here. The key three is right around the corner. Don't go anywhere. Before we get into hour number two of our heavy-duty news and information content, I want to take a minute to say, way to go, Bison women's basketball team. Have you been following what this team has been doing? They are 17-2 after winning at St. Thomas last night, 75-66. They have won 15 straight games. They're undefeated in the Summit League, and they are red hot. They are number two in the mid-major poll. So they do this, if you're not familiar with Division I basketball, you've got, you know, the power conferences, and NDSU is going to have a hard time beating South Carolina. Look, we just kind of get all that. But of the teams that are considered mid-majors, so these teams that would be like in the group of five or group of four, I guess, whatever it is, in football, you know, your Mountain West teams, your Boise States or whatever, they've started doing a poll with teams like this, and NDSU's number two in that poll. Last weekend, they beat South Dakota State in Brookings for the first time in about 10 years. South Dakota State has just been the jackbooted thug of Summit League women's basketball for forever and ever. And for a couple of years there, South Dakota was in that mix, but South Dakota State sort of regained its position. And NDSU has some really good teams, and what Jory Collins has done at NDSU is phenomenal. Completely rebuilt that program, and they are nothing to be – nobody you want to mess with. They've done a fantastic job. And so now NDSU has a spot where they're looking down at South Dakota State in the standings. And NDSU could very well be headed to the NCAA tournament this year. They've got a top player named Avery Conan, who is just a wonderful basketball player, can just do it all. She's quick. She can shoot. She rebounds, defends. And you go to a game, or I've seen a video of her after games signing a ton of autographs for little girls. And it's just, it's so fun. So Bison basketball has a bona fide star. They are on a 15-game winning streak, and they are looking really, really strong. So fun stuff. It could be a really fun year. And Dave Richmond with the Bison men, they're having a great year, too. It's maybe not quite on the level where the women are, but I think the men are leading the league right now, leading the conference. So fun times for Bison basketball, and it's great to see. The Shack is a really fun place, Bison Sports Arena, when the teams are playing well. And I have not gotten out to a game, men's or women's, this year, and I better do that because it's some fun stuff. So let's go support those kids. It's a big deal for them when they show up, and there's a gym full of people. So let's all do what we can to get out and support them if you're within a reasonable distance there. All right, it's time for the Key 3 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, and the Key 3 is brought to you today by Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. DriveWithVision.com is the website. Vision Ford Lincoln is hiring in their sales team and their service team. And if you like working on cars, why would you not want to work for Vision Ford Lincoln? Reasonable drive, even from the metro area here, a half hour you're down there going to work, and you make more money than anywhere else in the five-state area. No weekends, full benefits. That's what I'm talking about there. That's a darn good job. Wow. So a place to put your service career in overdrive. If you're into sales, they've got good sales jobs there too. Go to drivewithvision.com. Drivewithvision.com. We will, by the way, be doing another qualifier for the Valentine's Day trip of a lifetime coming up here in the next half hour as well. So stay tuned for that. Okay, the Key 3 today. These are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. This one, a little breaking news here. I don't have a breaking news sounder at my desk here in Watford City today, but Attorney General Pam Bondi has announced the arrest of two people that were affiliated with that breaking and entering, I'll call it, of the church service at the city's church on Sunday in St. Paul. And if you missed that story, I'm not sure how, but if you did, one of the pastors on staff at City's Church happens to be an ICE agent. He's a head of Immigration Customs Enforcement of that division in the Twin Cities. And so the protesters, fueled, I think, by the CNN guy, Lemon, decide they were going to go in the middle of the church service. I joked yesterday, not sure if they had a lightning rod in their hand when they walked in just to make it a little easier for God to take them out, but they walked in during the middle of the church service. Families there just having a peaceful church service. They had just finished the prayer, starting the message, and these protesters walk in yelling these vile things, horrifying things that never should be said in a church or probably anywhere, intimidating the people that were there, sticking cameras in people's faces, little kids scared. The pastor is furious about this. He's like, what are you guys doing here? And then the CNN Lemon guy comes up to the pastor and accuses him of every name in the book and every horrific offense you could think of, and saying, no, this is First Amendment, it's free speech. What an idiot. So I have been saying ever since, probably every day on the show, that I want to have arrests in this. You do not do that. And if it was some Trump supporters that went into a Muslim mosque, I'd feel the same way. And they would rightfully be ripped by any reasonable human being here. But Pam Bondi says that two people now have been arrested, and I hope that this is just the start of many more. But she put out on social media about an hour ago, minutes ago, at my direction, Homeland Security FBI agents executed an arrest in Minnesota. We arrested Nikema Levy Armstrong, who allegedly played a key role in organizing the coordinated attack on City's Church in St. Paul, Minnesota. We will share more updates as they become available. Listen loud and clear. We do not tolerate attacks on places of worship. And then a few minutes later came another message from her. A second arrest has been made at my direction. Chantil Louisa Allen has been taken into custody. More to come. We will protect our houses of worship. Good. They should. Whether it's a Christian church or a Muslim mosque or what a Jewish temple, doesn't matter. We have a freedom of religion in this country, and you cannot walk in the middle of that service and interrupt, threaten, intimidate, just desecrate the house of the Lord. So good for you, Pam Bondi. That's story number one. Story number two, U.S. economy. We just continue to get home run after home run on the economy. The U.S. economy grew at a faster pace than expected in the third quarter. The Bureau of Economic Analysis released its final reading of third quarter GDP, which showed the economy grew at an annualized rate of 4.4% in the three-month period, including July, August, and September. Expectations were 3.3%. The 4.4 was the fastest rate of growth in 2 years. Spending was also up, which is very important because spending is a measure of how confident people are in the economy. Now, there's always subtitles to these movies. And yes, you can rightfully argue that a lot of the spending has been done by people in the top 50%. And you'd be right to say that. But in the country, when you have at least any group that is spending well, it means that you've got good things going on there. And I read for you a couple of days ago a story about the bottom 50%. And it's not that they have cut their spending back. It's just that the top 50% is growing its rate of spending faster than they are. So the lower 50% is kind of staying flat, upper going up, but that doesn't mean that it is only the upper class that are spending any money at all. So I think that's an important distinction to make right there. I did also, I'm looking for it and I can't find it, but I did hear some numbers earlier today about unemployment claims. And the message I took from that was that that news got a little bit better too. Fewer claims ongoing and fewer claims initial. But again, I want to be honest with you and telling you that's what I heard. I've been trying to look for those numbers and I have not been able to find them. But it looks like we got decent numbers, if not great numbers, on unemployment claims. So this is very good. Story number three. I talked about this quite a bit in the first hour. It bears repeating because I think it's really important. State Representative Ty Dressler, a Republican from Richardton, North Dakota, has introduced a competing measure, I'll call it, to what Mike Nathy is proposing in the legislature's special session. Nathy is proposing universal free breakfast and lunch for all kids in public school in North Dakota. Dressler says, I don't know that we need to pay for the rich people's lunch and breakfast for their kids. How about we just raise the lineup from what we're doing now where you get your free meals at 225% of the poverty line, raise that to 300%. That would be about $96,000, $97,000. So that solves the problem without overspending in a needless fashion. So let's hope that Dressler's bill gets a long look because we need to have again, the government doesn't have any money. The government has only the money that you and I have given it. So let's not spend everybody's money, including the most, the poorest North Dakotans, on things for the richest North Dakotans. Doesn't make any sense. Let's have a common sense perspective here. Get this done with Representative Dressler's bill. When we come back, the best thing I heard all day, Scott Bessent. I'm so glad that Barry Sineko, in his infinite wisdom, many years ago, decided to have a boat show this time of year, late January. We need something to get us thinking about spring. The 2026 boat show, the Red River Valley Boat and Marine Product Show, scheduled for this weekend at the Fargo Dome. Barry's been good enough to join us. Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing very well. Doing very well.
Well, thanks for joining us here, giving us a few minutes to talk about this show. It's a big deal every year, and it's so fun to look ahead to warmer weather. What do you got planned for this year's boat show?
Well, right now we are, as we talk, we're bringing in all the new fishing boats, pontoons. We got dock dealers still coming in, personal watercraft. So everything that's new for 2026 will be on display at the Dome. And kind of interesting to just see the new products lines. And I've seen a few and, You know, Lund's got a new kind of product line out, and that's really interesting. If you've ever fished up on the border, you may see the bigger fishing boats out there, kind of a lot of metal on them because there's rocks everywhere. And so they got their own line of that. So as they come in, it's fun to see what's new for this season.
Yeah, and it's just kind of seeing those boats and all the marine products and getting out and thinking about getting out and warmer days. It just warms up your heart. And I love it. You guys start on Friday. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday, noon to 8. Saturday, 10 to 8. And then Sunday, 10 to 5 at the Fargo Dome. The 34th annual Red River Valley Boat and Marine Product Show. Tell me about some of the reactions you hear from people when they come in and you get a chance to walk around and mingle with people. There's got to be a lot of smiles on faces up there during the boat show.
There really is. People are naturally in a good mood. They're looking at all the new gel coats. And I'm physically looking at Minnesota Inboard is moving in right now. And they've got a bigger location this year. And I think this is year two they're out here. Holy cow, these tow boats are incredible. But, you know, one of the fun things, too, at the boat show is it's fun to watch people just run into neighbors and friends. And then they have a beer, and they're just chatting away and catching up because they haven't seen each other since they left the lake. A lot of lake neighbors find themselves meeting up here, too. So it's just a lot of fun. It's, you know, you're coming out. You're in a good mood because you're thinking about summer and what you want to do. The kids are antsy. You bring them up to the trout pond so they do some live trout fishing, which we have out at the show. And it just gets the process going. You know, it's a little cold outside right now, so a little summer dreaming is a perfect combination right now.
Pro angler Jim Carroll's going to be there, too. He's sharing his tips and tricks on how to catch more fish this summer. And you get to see it all there, the high-performance boats, the pontoons, the family cruisers, personal watercraft, all those things. Adults, $12. Ages 5 and under are free. 6 to 12, $4. At the Boat and Marine Product Show up at the Fargo Dome. Barry, I'm sure it'll be a great time. It always is. Thanks for getting us thinking spring, my man. I appreciate you. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today.
Stay warm, buddy.
Thank you. You do the same. Yeah. Good chance to be inside thinking about these things. So good stuff. Thank you, Barry. Have a great day. All right. We've got to get to the best thing I heard all day. I would say that Donald Trump is rubbing off on the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent. Many of the key Trump officials and cabinet members, especially those that deal with finance or commerce, joined the president over in Davos at the World Economic Forum. And yesterday was kind of the big day. The president spoke, took questions, and a number of the other people did too. And Howard Lutnick was one of the first up. He delivered a great speech in kind of a panel discussion. Basically just said, look at what we're doing in the United States. We're returning to things that make sense, that most people agree with, instead of these special interest things, and you guys need to follow suit. So he kind of got it started. Trump did his thing, and Scott Bessent had a chance to speak yesterday as well. Now, some presidential wannabes are also always at these things, and so you see people that, you know, maybe someday want to be president, like Gavin Newsom, for instance, the governor of California. Bessent has, in the last few weeks, become increasingly direct. It's like, I'm just tired of all these stupid things you people are saying and doing, and I'm just going to come right out and give it to you. And he did yesterday. I was telling somebody about this yesterday, about what I heard from Scott Bessent. I said, Scott Bessent woke up and chose violence.
I think it's very, very ironic that, you know, Governor Newsom, who strikes me as Patrick Bateman meets Sparkle Beach Ken, may be the only Californian who knows less about economics than Kamala Harris. He's here this week with his billionaire sugar daddy, Alex Soros, and the Davos is a perfect place for a man who, when everyone else was on lockdown, when he was having people arrested for going to church, he was having $1,000 a night meals at the French Laundry, and I'm sure the California people won't forget that. And I can tell my message to Governor Newsom is the Trump administration is coming to California. We are going to crack down on waste, fraud, and abuse. And I was told he was asked to give a speech on his signature policies, but he's not speaking because what have his economic policies brought? outward migration from California, a gigantic budget deficit, the largest homeless population in America, and the poor folks in the Palisades who had their homes burned down, he is here hobnobbing with the global elite while his California citizens are still homeless. Shame on him. He is too smug, too self-absorbed, and too economically illiterate to know anything.
Thank you very much.
Let me know if you need any further clarification.
Oh, wow. In your face. This is, I don't want to say this is out of character for Scott Bessent, but I have never heard anything like that come from him before. Now, when I say never, I didn't know him a year ago. But since we started hearing him talk, he's always kind of come across as, okay, let's just, you know, be thoughtful about this. He's an economist, and those kind of people don't normally talk like that. I think there's some Trump influence there. Now, I can say things all the time about, I have concerns about the way things are said at times, but when you talk about the battle that's going on with people who have voluntarily entered the fray, this to me is completely within bounds. And I loved every second of that because it needed to be said. They don't invite the Trump administration to these things because they want to. They invite them because they have to. Newsom is one of them, the global elites who, that we have a set of rules for me and then a certain set of rules for everybody else. And during COVID, everybody else had a set of rules, but I'm above all of that. There is no fear in this Trump administration, and that is important. There is no fear of Gavin Newsom politically, but more importantly, there is no fear of the terrorist in the Trump world because Alex Soros is a key underwriter of a lot of the things you're seeing that are going to happen across Minnesota on Friday. There's a lot of money from Soros Incorporated that has found its way into the political process for disruption, anarchy, chaos, terrorism, you name it. And the Trump administration and Scott Bessent, it was intentional that they put that name, the Soros name, in there. No fear. And we need more of that on those particular situations and issues where Americans and supporters of the president need to hear them say, we're not afraid of any of you, and we never were. So I think that's the best thing I heard all day. Coming back, Jill Morissette, Office of Management and Budget for North Dakota. You could spend Valentine's Day in Vegas. Thanks to, well, a whole bunch of people. All Sager Meats, Kingpins, Frontier Airlines, AM 1100 The Flag. If you haven't yet, go to AM1100TheFlag.com to register. Click on the Valentine's Day in Vegas banner. And every weekday here at 10 a.m., we draw somebody out of the pile of folks who have registered. And you have 11 minutes to call in at 701-271-1100. And if you do that, then you are qualified for the final drawing party where somebody is going to win round-trip airfare for two from Fargo to Vegas, three-night hotel stay, two tickets to the Wizard of Oz at the Sphere on Valentine's Day, and $500 spending cash. So make sure you get over there, am1100theflag.com website. There's also a live drawing party today, remote over at All Sager Meats on Veterans. I think that's 3 to 5 today over there, so that's another way to get registered, or just do it in the comfort of your own home. AM1100theflag.com and get registered there. So today, our lucky qualifier, Travis Nelson of West Fargo. So Travis has 11 minutes. Addison will set the timer. And Travis, 701-271-1100. If you know Travis, do him a favor. Give him a call. Say, hey, dude, get on the phone and get your spot in line, and you could win the big prize. So thanks to All Sager Meats, Kingpins, and Frontier Airlines for making that all happen. All right, we are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line right now by Joe Morissette. And Joe is a key individual in our state about managing the resources that we have and making sense of all this. He's the director of office of the Office of Management and Budget for the state of North Dakota. He's been kind enough to give us a few minutes here today because his office released a report on the most recent fiscal year for state of North Dakota. So, Joe, thank you for joining us. We appreciate your time today.
Good morning, Steve. Happy to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. So you measured the fiscal year starting July 1st of 2024 through June 30th of 2025, and you've published the annual comprehensive financial report, it's called. And these things may sound a little dry at face value, but it's important stuff about how we live and work and do things here in North Dakota. And it sounds like the state is in a pretty good position, and it got a little bit better during the last fiscal year. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Steve. It's not a report that the general public is anxiously awaiting our publication of, but it is an important document for the state, important resource for people that want to dig into it and better understand the state's financial position. It's an important document for bond rating companies and things like that that look to that document because it's this one comprehensive look at all of state government, everything from the executive branch, the judicial branch, higher ed, everything is rolled into one comprehensive, as the name implies, comprehensive financial report. And so you're right. Things got a little better. We've been on a continual track of progress, I would say, over the past several years. And we had good progress in the 2025 financial report, like you said, that ended the fiscal year that ended on June 30 of 2025. We had strong growth in, there's kind of a separate language with government accounting. And so we refer to this net position number, which is kind of like a private sector balance sheet, what would be called the owner's equity piece. I used to teach accounting, and so it's kind of that leftover piece after all the liabilities get subtracted from the assets. That's what's left. We don't call it owner's equity because there are no owners here. We call it the net position in government accounting, and that net position, so kind of the net amount that remains after if we had to pay all the liabilities of the state, continues to grow. And it grew by 9.5% just in that last fiscal year of 2025. So that was a very, very positive, change in that position during that year.
So let's dumb that down for people like me who sure. like to have things in simple terms. So basically, we all know, like, if you have a house and you have the house is worth $200,000, but your mortgage is $100,000, you have $100,000 worth of ownership in that house. Well, I think what you're telling us is the people of North Dakota, who are the owners of the government of North Dakota, increased their equity position in their house by 9.5% over that last year. Is that fair?
That's a fair analogy. And, using that analogy, that equity piece grows if the value of that house goes up or the mortgage gets paid down, right? And so we had both things happen in the state's financial position. We had the value of our assets go up. A big item on that balance sheet is the legacy fund. The legacy fund continues to grow and get invested. It grows through the allocation of 30% of our oil taxes. It grows through the investment of that principal and the growth through investment returns. And so that grew significantly during that period, along with other assets. That's just an example of one of them. And then at the same time, the outstanding balance of our liabilities was getting paid down. So we are a state with very little debt. We've issued very few bonds in relation to other states. We are usually at the bottom in terms of overall outstanding debt or debt per capita, however you want to look at it. No real significant increase in that debt in the last several years, but we continue to pay it down. And so we've got growth in the assets and a reduction in the amount of debt. And so an increase in that equity or that net position, right?
You talked about legacy fund. It's been one of the great stories of our state here over the last 15, 20 years or so. And the fund value of legacy fund right now is about $13.4 billion. That was as of November 30th. And so you talk about that, and then you look at the growth in that, and they've had, I think it was almost 11% return on the assets in that fund year over year. That legacy fund continues to be a rock star.
It does. It does. Right. That just in that one fiscal year that we're talking about, the balance that increased the state's net position, it went from 10.8 billion to over 13 billion. And so that's a great story.
We need to have them manage all of our 401k plans, because holy smokes, if we could get 10% a year, that's a pretty good thing. And like you said, from 10-ish to 13-ish, that's crazy. So you take a look at, you know, some of these numbers that you're talking about, and you had 9.5%. Another number that I found interesting in your report is that the general fund balance rose by almost 12% in this year compared to the year before. Tell us about that number and what that means.
Sure. And I don't want to get too far into the weeds here and bore you and your listeners, but the general fund, you know, is kind of the state's main checkbook in terms of budgeting. It's like the primary place where like all the state tax revenue goes, whether it's individual income, corporate income, sales tax, all kind of goes into the general fund. And then that's what really funds a lot of what we think of for government services, all the operation of government and school funding, and those things are primarily all funded from that general fund. In this case, for financial reporting purposes, it gets a little more complicated, and other things that maybe aren't technically called the general fund they kind of get lumped into this based on how generally accepted accounting principles we're required to report things. So for this purpose, the general fund does include other things that are state funds and are available for state uses, like the legacy fund and like the budget stabilization fund, even though others that are more involved in the budget would consider those special funds because they're for a special purpose. For this financial report, they kind of get lumped in with that general fund. So we had growth in all of those areas. We had growth in the budget stabilization fund, which by statute retains a balance of 15% of our general fund spending. And so as the budget grows, that amount grows. Over $900 million is available in that fund right now just to offset budget reductions. And then the legacy fund that we talked about, which continues to grow. And we also had a very strong performance in our general fund revenues. We closed out the biennium, the 2-year period that ended in June, with an increase in revenues over and above what our forecast would have shown by almost 14%. And so we had a significant balance that had accumulated in the general fund, kind of in the state's checkbook, just because we had collected more in revenue through economic growth than what we had expected in the forecast. So all those things kind of get lumped together in this financial report when we talk about that almost 12% growth in the general fund.
Why has the state seen these results, Joe?
Well, you know, in this case, some of it is like we said, the strong performance of the legacy fund. We've had strong collections in oil and gas taxes and strong investment returns when those funds are invested to grow that legacy fund. The general fund itself, we've gone through a period of very conservative forecasting, a lot of uncertainties, of course, through COVID and the kind of the economic rebound right after COVID. So we had very conservative, very almost flat revenue forecasts. But as it turned out, the North Dakota economy performed better than what those conservative economic assumptions would have expected.
Yep.
And so we had sales tax, you know, which isn't just what we buy at Walmart or, you know, it's not just individual consumers purchasing. There's a big component of that that's
right.
Tied to oil and gas activity,
goes into
business transactions.
Yeah. And so, hey, Joe, I hate to cut you off here, but I've got to get one more question, and I have a hard break coming up here. Give me your best 30 seconds. It could be a slowdown in the oil patch where I'm coming to you from today out in Watford City. Continental Resources is shutting down rigs. How could that affect things going forward? Are you worried?
Well, we're certainly watching it closely so far. This finding, we've tracked very close to the oil forecast, which again was a conservative forecast, but you know, we have a little bit of a dip in the projected production level built into the budget. Whether or not we meet that, if the price stays low and there's a more of a pullback on drilling, that will be a challenge to meet that forecast. So we're certainly watching it closely.
Very good. Joe, really good stuff. Appreciate you taking some time to break it down for us. It looks like some things that we can be proud of here in the state of North Dakota. Thanks for your time.
You bet.
Thank you, Joe. Joe Morissette, Director of Office of Management and Budget for the state of North Dakota. That legacy fund, man. What a story that is. All right, when we come back, thousands of businesses across Minnesota are expected to close tomorrow to show their hatred for Donald Trump. And one says it might cost me my business. That's next. Row and Joe Junk Haul and Removal is the place to call if you got a pile of junk and you got to get rid of it. John Minton, friend of mine, gotten to know John over the last few years, 30-year combat vet. And he puts his family's name on every job that they do. When it's got to go, call Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal, ROENJOJunk.com. Whether it's residential, commercial, grandma was a hoarder, whatever the situation is, if you got a mess, got to get it out of there, John Minton, he'll get it done for you. Good faith, family, freedom guy, and he'll do a great job for you. Go to ROENJOJunk.com. When it's got to go, call Roe and Joe. Well, tomorrow across Minnesota, thousands of businesses, reports the Star Tribune, will be shutting down to show their solidarity with people who are protesting ICE being in Minnesota. And this really is a protest about Donald Trump, of course. We know that. The Star Tribune did a nice job of talking to a number of different people and different businesses across Minnesota about their response to this. Mike Brown owns 8 Twin Cities restaurants, and I took a look at the names of the restaurants. It's nothing I'd heard of before. They're kind of more ethnic restaurants and niche food places that are around the Twin Cities there. He told the Star Tribune that they are going to be closing tomorrow to show support for the anti-ICE efforts. He says the shutdown will mean a loss of $100,000. For his company. And that could mean his struggling business, I guess things have been tough there already, might have to close for good. He said, decided to join the cause anyway was the hardest decision that his team has ever had to make. I guess I salute him for standing up for his convictions. And as I always tell you, we all should have the right to protest. And certainly this business has the right not to open, which will mean good things for other businesses who will open. And do what they're doing there. So it'll be interesting to see what the story is and how big of a deal this really is. I imagine that if you have businesses that are willing to close down, you're also having employees that are not able to go to work and make money. And what I didn't see in any of these interviews or any of the questions of the employers is, are you still going to pay your employees for that day? I imagine some of them will. Because they believe strongly in the effort. But what about the business that closes and you kind of rely on that money to go to work, to get when you go to work? What are you supposed to do for them? You're losing 20% of your paycheck for the week. So it's a tough deal right there. This is going to be interesting to watch and see. But there's a lot of money behind this. And obviously there's a lot of emotion in Minnesota. So I imagine this will be fairly significant. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. All right, we're going to finish up the program. 271-1100 if you want to jump in. And if you're just kind of getting to know the show, you might be wondering, you know, hey, when is the time to call in? Well, you can call in whenever you want, but I try to put the show together where we're going to give you a lot of information in a two-hour period so you're informed of the world around you. It's not really sort of your coffee shop conversations show. We have some really great programs on this show. Jay and Scott both do really good shows that way. I like to load up the show with a lot of info and perspective so that you can just kind of make sense of the world around you. But I do welcome calls, emails, text messages. But we don't oftentimes block out a whole, you know, hour or segment for a conversation. We will when there's something that I feel we really need to open up the lines, just let people vent. We'll do that from time to time, but it's not often. But just know that you're always welcome to call in or email studioflagfamily.com. The text line is full, as it is every day. There's probably 15 text messages here that have come in the last few minutes. Let's try to get to some of those as we finish up today. Steve, the North Dakota Legacy Fund was voted in by North Dakota citizens, not legislators. Yes, that's very true. I will give a lot of credit to the people of North Dakota, but somebody had to come up with the idea, so I credit there. But it's something really smart that this state has done. I think our North Dakota government legislature generally do a good job, but I've never got a medal from my dad, a coach, or a boss for doing what I'm supposed to do. Well, that's a fair point, too. But if you applied that criteria, you'd never compliment anybody on this whole thing or anything that they do. So, yes, you're right, but we can still say job well done. Stay on it, Steve. We are in agreement with your opinion on the socialist madness for free school lunches. We have a welfare program for the underprivileged. The state should know better than to get involved this way. Okay. Steve, in regard to school lunches, I am on the other side on this one. If children are required by law to attend school, then we need to feed them while they are there. Breakfast is a key part of that, as kids need a full belly to focus on learning. I also think it's important that all students are on the same playing field. This will humble the rich kids and benefit everybody. Again, it's just the point that you're spending money when you don't need to. And I'll have the conversation. It's a good debate. And you make a fair point. If we're going to make kids go to school, we should feed them while they're there. But breakfast, too? Breakfast, you're doing at home. You haven't got to school yet there. And all students on the same playing field. I get it. But I think you can accomplish that different ways with, school lunch pass. Everybody's looks the same, but you just got different money loaded on it. There's just a way to do it. But fair point. Steve, when it comes to school lunches, if you can't afford the child, don't have any kids. We were denied free school lunches for our children, made less than $50,000. Now they want to pay for wealthy people's lunches. F that. Okay. We know how you feel about that. Have a great day, my friend. Stay warm. Keep on flying that flag.